From Iowa Public Radio News, this is The Exchange. I'm Dean Borg. Americans owe much of who they are and what they're free to do and say to the millions of men and women who have defended those freedoms. And while some of the veterans' experiences are tales of heroism, most are common stories of military service. There's a national project recording those stories in the veterans' own words. And during the next hour, we're talking with Iowans leading the project and also with veterans telling their military experiences. Getting veterans talking and recording their experiences. That's our topic on The Exchange, and we'll get started right after the NPR news. Dean Borg continuing The Exchange. Today we're talking, as we said earlier, about recording veterans' impressions of their military service, telling about the circumstances of that service and the format and how to get that done. We're going to be talking with Tim Walsh, who directs the Hoover Presidential Library in West Branch. Tim, how are you?
Good to be with you, Dean.
And Bill Pottarelli, an orthopedic surgeon who volunteers at the library. And Bill, nice to have you here.
Hello.
And Bill Crow, another Bill in the studio with us. He's a Marine, and in fact, he's wearing Marine garb. Always, once a Marine, always a Marine. Isn't that right, Bill Crow?
That's absolutely correct.
And you're from Iowa City, and you have participated in the Veterans Oral History Project already. So we're going to be asking you about that. In fact, let's do that right now. What moved you to want to tell about your veterans' experiences?
Bill Pottarelli talked to me once about doing it, and I didn't get back to him right away. And there was a follow-up. And at that point, I realized that it was probably a good idea, not only for me, but for other people who have not served in the service or may not understand the sacrifice that service people make.
I'm glad we talked with you first because that is the basis, I'm sure, Tim, Walt, because the Hoover Library is sort of facilitating in Iowa, if I understand it correctly, the national project, which is now 10 years old.
That's right, Dean. The project starts at the Library of Congress, who's been a partner with us in this effort. In fact, we partnered with them, and they have hundreds of partners doing these interviews all across the country because they recognize the singular importance of military experience in the lives of so many young men and women during crucial parts of their lives. What people often ask us is, well, why the Hoover Library? Well, a lot of people don't realize that Herbert Hoover signed the legislation establishing the Veterans Administration. He believed, both because of his service in World War I and food relief, and later on as president, of the importance of preserving and taking care of our veterans. And in some ways, through history and through memory, this project captures in audio and transcript form this extraordinary service that young men and women have made toward the preservation of our freedom.
In one way or another, a milestone in that person's life.
Exactly. I think it's true with all forms of military service going back to probably the Revolutionary War. I mean, we've always tried to recognize and revere veteran service. We did after the Revolutionary War by giving them land and encouraged these veterans to move west. After the Civil War, the bond that was created among these people often led to political office or other forms of service. And we've been doing the same even after World War II with all these honor flights, which again helped to recognize extraordinary service that most of these people cannot forget.
You know, you cannot forget. That's right. They either retain it or they're happy to tell about it, but sometimes there's no in-between. Either the person is very closed-mouthed, doesn't even talk with his
right.
husband or her husband or his wife about it.
Well, Bill Crow was just telling us before we went on the air story, too, about how all veterans, if they've have been wounded, of course, feel bad for those who've lost a limb. And, of course, those who have lost a limb feel bad for those who are in wheelchairs. And those who are in wheelchairs feel bad for those who are not present. And all of them feel, as we've heard with this young man who's going to get the Congressional Medal of Honor here from Iowa, the loss of those who are not present. Mm-hmm. They're the real heroes. If you've watched Band of Brothers or any of those films on the war where they interview veterans, they'll tell you, I'm not a hero. It's the people who are not with us. And as you said, Dean, many of them cannot talk about their service. And many of them, when they do come to us and talk about it, their kids have their mouths open. They say, Dad, I didn't know what you went through.
You know, and there are some who are eager to tell about something that happened to them that maybe changed their life. In fact, we have a person on the line here right now who actually called in knowing this was going to be the subject, called in before we began the program. I'm going to put him on. It's John calling from Urbandale. John, we're taking your call early in the program because you've been waiting and you want to talk about something about Vietnam.
I was a young Lance Corporal in Vietnam. I was also a Marine.
Semper Fi.
Well, you might not say that after I'm finished, but...
That was Bill Crow who said Semper Fi here in the studio, but you go ahead, John. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, as a young Lance Corporal, I was on a bunker guarding a trash dump when a staff sergeant drove up in his Jeep and gave me a order to shoot these kids in a dump that were just scavenging for food. Now, I don't know if you realize how much stuff the American government throws away, especially when they're at war, but these children were just looking for particles of food, so to speak, to stay alive. And you know, in the military, there's two types of orders, lawful orders given by NCOs and direct orders given by officers. And anybody that is given what they feel is an illegal order do not have to obey that order. And I did not obey that order. I didn't, I couldn't, and never would commit such an act as to shoot little children looking for food. So that 60 seconds changed my life. That's all this incident lasted was 1 minute.
Mm-hmm. Would you?
I became a man that day.
John?
Maybe not the Marine Corps kind of man, but I became a man that day.
John, would you feel comfortable recording your experiences, that one and others, for this Veterans History Project?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for calling and sharing that. We appreciate your call from Urbandale. And the number, if you want to share an not so much an experience, because I'm sure the experiences vary, but what I really would like to hear is, if you're a veteran, would you want to share your story, and why or why not? And what wouldn't you want to share about your military experiences? The number to call is 866-780-9100. Let's move over. Bill Crow, we've spoken with you here just a minute ago. And why did you decide to participate? I mean, first of all, how did you hear about the project?
Well, Bill Ponderelli is the one that introduced me to the project. And when he first introduced me to it, I didn't commit. I thought about it for some time.
Well, what was the reticence? Why didn't you want to commit right away?
there's a lot you don't talk about. And... I wasn't sure I wanted to relive some experiences, but after a while I realized in my own mind that it might be good for me, but it would be also better, good for the general public to have these things recorded.
Tim, I'm going to go back to I didn't want to relive this experience,
sure,
which Bill just said. Do you ever interact with these veterans, or are you administering the project?
No, essentially, the program is administered by our education specialist, Mary Evans, and she does a fine job. She's done over 240-some interviews, mm-hmm, or directed them. But we've been blessed, too, to have people like Bill Ponderelli and other volunteers who have actually done the interviews.
And so, Bill Pottarelli, you're the orthopedic surgeon who volunteers over at the Hoover Library, and you're the one who interacts then with the veteran and maybe even the family. Do you find people who come in there just a little bit reticent about what they're getting into?
Yes, almost everyone. These are mostly line soldiers. They haven't been groomed for command, so they're not used to being in the limelight, so to speak. This is quite impressive to come to a presidential library and to try to speak intelligently enough to present something that will be included in the Library of Congress.
Yes.
So even from that standpoint, they're very nervous. And as we put it to them, Dean.
Yeah, go ahead. Because you're going to say how you put these.
As far as content for the veterans, what I tell them, I try to contact them on the phone the day before and tell them they're the expert. They can tell as much or as little as they want.
Do they come in with notes?
Yes, they're given a outline. I'm not supposed to ask questions and grill them like it's an oral educational exam, but use prompts to jog their memory. And they will add in the margin notes to what's expected of them to talk about.
Is this often emotional?
Very. And it's really startling. One example, I think, real short, I interviewed an asexual man from World War II. He was a soldier in Patton's Army. He talked about his buddies he remembered from elementary school. He was from Kansas, 6, 7, 8-year-olds. And they had died in the Pacific, and he cried for a fairly long time as if they had died yesterday. And this was 60 years after the fact.
I witnessed that very thing. I was honored to be able – I invited along as a representative of Iowa Public Radio to cover an initial honor flight. And I saw a lot of tears of veterans reacting emotionally to what happened on that honor flight that day. I was just along as an observer, as a news reporter. But it was very, very emotional. Bill Crow, you've told your story. Was it emotional for you? You said there were some things that initially you thought you didn't even want to recall.
Part of it was very emotional. A lot of it was not. Just how I decided to join the Marine Corps and why, and my love for the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
But there are certain incidences that happen in combat that are hard to recall. And no matter how many times you recall them, they're always emotional.
Let's take a call here from Dean, who's calling from Dubuque. Dean, go ahead.
Yes, I hope there comes a day when there are no more military heroes, no more people without legs and arms. I think I respect what the military people did, but I think a number of the wars fought by this country were unnecessary, and I don't think they were fought for our freedom either.
But do you think it's necessary, Dean, that those who did serve, who lost lives, and those who did survive limbs, and maybe are even emotionally scarred, as we've just heard here, emotions spilling out even during conversation, do you feel that it's important to preserve those for the national history?
I do, but I think it's just as important to stop this military spending and these wars that we're fighting that are senseless. Iraq, Afghanistan, which we can't win.
Dean, let's hear from Bill Pottarelli because he has a conversation here with you.
Dean, try contacting the website and get your own impression of what we're doing with this project. These brave men during war, but now brave telling us their emotions, is to document how horrible the reality of war is. And my naive belief is if we collect these histories from so many brave men and women, war will become obsolete.
Dean, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate your calling. Tim, do you have some reaction over at the Hoover Library, people coming in who not only are reticent but have, like Dean feels, this is a story I don't want to tell, and I hope I never have to tell it again, and nobody else ever has to tell it.
I think, generally speaking, nobody chooses war because it is a wonderful or a beautiful thing. It is, however, an effort to document service. And we've almost as a nation uniformly agreed that regardless of how you feel about the justification for a war, that the service of individuals must be recognized. And that's been universal since the Greeks.
I wanted to ask, who will have access? I mean, everybody in the United States probably has access to the Library of Congress, but do they really? That is, how are you going to get there?
Well, I'll kind of throw that one to Bill Pontarelli, who's got the website address. But what they're really trying to do with the Library of Congress is to not only document service, but obviously to interview so many thousands of veterans and to make that accessible in a way that historians in the future can use, but also to document for those families that extraordinary service. Mm-hmm. But, Bill, do you want to go ahead and give them the website and explain how people access that information?
So these interviews, before you begin that, are available through the Internet?
Only 5% are posted online. There's 65,000 so far. So 5% of that is a lot of interviews that are available.
Yes.
And the quickest way I've used to get at it is to call up the Google page and throw in Library of Congress Veterans History Project. But the website is www.loc.org/gov/vets.
Let's remember to give that again. So if you are listening and didn't get that copied down, maybe it can be Googled and it'll come up there as well. But we'll try to give it again as we go along in the program.
Okay.
Yep. We have another caller here from Lake City, and I'm going to put Gary on from Lake City. Gary?
Oh, thank you for taking my call, and I'd like to thank those veterans who served in Vietnam. What I wanted to briefly talk about was something that has just opened up and become accessible to the public is the secret war that was fought out of Thailand and Laos. That we airmen, soldiers, we fought ground operations and air operations out of these locations, but they were considered secret. The base that I was stationed on, NKP Thailand at the time, was considered secret. We couldn't write home where we were at. Even though we were not boots on the ground in Vietnam, we never got the recognition of being a Vietnam veteran from the Vietnam veterans, the people who actually were boots on the ground. And that's not a problem for me. What is a problem is that there were people working outside of Vietnam that were working for the Vietnam effort and working to keep South Vietnam free.
Gary, I'm going to interrupt just to say, is that an operation then in which you served that you wouldn't even be able to tell about today?
No, I don't think so. For example, one thing I would like to tell about, which is accessible, it was just broadcasted by Brian Williams just this week. There's a Chief Master Sergeant Eckenbacher who worked at a Lima site out of Laos, and he was the NCO in charge there, and they were in charge of monitoring sensors that were along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And they were overwhelmingly attacked by a large number of North Vietnamese regulars. And they were on this mountain, and it was hard to climb, and they were shooting down, and they were keeping the NVA away. But they weren't allowed to evacuate. And finally, when they were allowed to evacuate, a lot of the men, there was only like 15 there. A lot of the men had died, but they did get some helicopters in there. And the very last helicopter out, Chief Master Sergeant Eckenbacher was firing at the NVA. They were coming over the top of the mountain towards them. And he crawled in. He was the last one in the last helicopter. And he got shot and killed.
Are you?
He was given.
Gary, were you a part of that? Were you a part of that? Did you witness that?
No, I did not witness.
Okay,
it.
Bill.
Gary brings up a relevant concern. The Truman Library had a Korean War exhibit to honor the 60th beginning of the Korean War, and they were told by Washington to take down part of it because it dealt with atomic secrets. Mm-hmm. And this project could potentially be a way to bring out some material that's still classified.
Gary, thank you for your call and for bringing that to our attention. And Bill Pontarelli, thank you for adding that postscript. Tim Walsh, how are the expenses being paid for this? Who's financing this?
Well, it's your tax dollars at work. I mean, quite frankly, this is part of our educational outreach. And as I mentioned, Mr. Hoover's commitment to veterans. And so it's a program that we wanted to participate in. We do several projects in conjunction with the Library of Congress. This has been very successful. They've told us that we have interviewed more people in the state of Iowa than any of their other partners.
And these interviews, are you overwhelmed with people requesting scheduling
Dean,
time?
What's interesting is initially we've been doing this, I think, now for 7 years. And initially we had more interviews than we could possibly accommodate. And people were physically able, particularly World War II vets, to drive to the library and be interviewed, in a recording room we have there. Well, now, of course, the World War II vets are getting older and older, and Bill will be going out to care centers. And we've had a renewal in the number of people being able to be interviewed. So we're going to capture that last group of World War II vets.
And the Bill that you referred to is
Bill Pontarelli. That's right.
The orthopedic surgeon his time
and
over there.
Bill studies a lot about the units. I think he reads extensively before he talks to them.
Yes. It's recommended that you do some reading about unit histories, the war, the theater.
So that you're being conversant with the vet? Right.
Exactly.
So you're knowledgeable going out there. You probably know a little bit more in certain aspects that the vet doesn't even know him or herself.
On occasion, yes.
Do you find – I mean, do you lead people into recalling things?
On occasion, yes, although it's not recommended. These folks are getting very old, and their memories aren't quite what they were.
Yes. I'm going to take a quick call here, and I have to make it very brief because we're approaching a break. Aaron, calling from Iowa City. Aaron?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. My dad was a Marine in Vietnam, and he passed away a few years ago, and I never asked him about his service, and he never told anybody. And
Do you feel cheated because of that?
I don't feel cheated because I think cheated implies that, I don't know, he intentionally kept stuff back from me. And he probably did, but I do feel like there's a huge void because there's all these years of my father's life that I can't account for and nobody else can. And I think it would have taught me a lot about what shaped him as well as how he shaped me and my siblings. And I really commend this project, and I really encourage every vet out there to do this.
Aaron, stay with us just a moment. Bill Pontarelli wants to respond.
Well, Aaron, sure. I really feel I understand what you're trying to say, and I wondered why men hold back. And I think it's a simple matter of not wanting to cry in front of their son because some of the stuff is so horrible that they have had to endure, that it brings tears to their eyes or make them into a person that they – oh, I strangled this guy or I cut his throat. And he didn't want you to hear that. That's something, an impression that I've made.
Aaron, I'm so glad that you've called. And thank you very much for hanging on the line so long with us to tell that story, because that really underscores what we're talking about in this Veterans Oral History Project. We're going to take a quick break now. We'll be back after the news to talk more about the Veterans Oral History Project at the Hoover Library. This is Dean Borg, and it's The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. Dean Borg, continuing The Exchange, and today we're talking about the Veterans Oral History Project being coordinated. The base is the National Library of Congress, but here in Iowa, It's being coordinated by the Hoover Presidential Library and Museum in West Branch. And our guest in the studio, Tim Walsh, who directs the library over at West Branch, Bill Pontarelli, an orthopedic surgeon who volunteers at the library and does some of the recording of those veteran histories. And we have Bill Crow here with us, too. He's a Marine veteran who served in Vietnam and has already recorded his experiences. Thank you all for being here. And we're being joined right now by Lieutenant Colonel Kevin Cruz, who commands the Iowa National Guard's 109th Medical Battalion in Iowa City. And Kevin Cruz, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
I understand you served in Afghanistan maybe a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I was there from May of 2007 to May of 2008.
I'd like to ask, you know, you're more of a contemporary veteran now, and you still are in the military. Do you think that the men and women serving today are having different experiences that than those of World War II and Vietnam, that they won't try to hold back so much? Or and another reason for that is that communication today is a lot different. That is, with all the technology, a lot of that may be being shared already.
Well, I think the technology that we were able to use in the location I was, you know, I was able to talk to my wife and my daughter and family almost on a daily basis. And so sometimes you're able to talk to people that you may confide in more so than you might with your fellow soldier. I think additionally, you know, as we come home, I think as an organization, you know, the military has determined, you know, we need to keep an eye on these service members. And, you know, so we're pushing more to have them either reach out for help if they have issues or just to talk a little bit more to try to prevent issues from developing.
Do you know of any oral history project or any recording of veterans now on active duty that's being done almost simultaneously on the spot as it happens?
I'm not really aware of any specific program. I just, you know, I know that there's ways now that people can tell their story, you know, that people can blog on almost a daily basis. You know, they put stuff on Facebook and things like that that at least gets it out there. I don't know if anybody has consolidated, you know, these blogs in any one location, but I know there's just, you know, various ways of recording kind of what you've been doing.
Sure. And what I was talking about earlier, the technology that we have today, you were able to, by satellite telephone, converse, you say, with your family in real time. And back in World War II, it would take months, and if not months, at least weeks, for the letters to be, first of all, go through censorship, because they would arrive with sentences blocked out from the censors who had erased whatever was being told by that veteran and communicating with his family back home. And that letter would arrive weeks later, Tim Walsh.
That's absolutely right, Dean. And of course, V-mail, as some World War II veterans will remember, was one way to try to just deal with the sheer volume of mail they were trying to get back and forth between the states and the battlefield. And that V-mail was critically important to Ken Burns, for example, when he did his multiple-part series, The War. But now, as the Lieutenant Colonel mentioned, we have all the social media. We are inundated with just an enormous volume of veterans' reflections, but a lot of it isn't being preserved or captured in an orderly or systematic way. I do also want to mention that many military units have historians. There are unit historians, yes, who capture the information, but yes, that's more of an official record of, yes, of conflict as opposed to the personal, emotional experience, yes, that we're capturing with these oral histories.
That's more of the historian records more of what's happening to the unit
where
as
the
a
unit,
whole,
that's
not
right,
the individuals.
That's right. And these are both important elements in documenting the war, but the personal stories are really incredible.
Bill Crow, you were a Vietnam serving, or you were a Marine serving in Vietnam. How was the communication there with your family back home?
It was strictly by letters, and there would be at least a two week delay, if not longer, mm-hmm, from the time you wrote a letter till you got a letter back.
But were those letters saved, and are they historical record for your family?
My mother saved every letter I wrote.
I can believe it.
And well, after I came home and got out of the service, people would ask me questions. And I could not put a timeline. They would say, when were you wounded? I did not remember. I just kind of blocked it out. So I went back and I put all of the letters in chronological order. And by reading through them, then I was able now to establish a timeline of when certain things happened to me that I had written about. And some I'd actually kind of either forgot about or somehow didn't remember.
And Colonel Cruz, you know, when you talk about having talked with your family from Afghanistan in real time, you know, that's something that is lost there unless those conversations were recorded, and I doubt it.
Yeah, you know, we didn't record, and, you know, I was able to use, like, Skype and Yahoo Messenger to use the webcams and stuff, and so there really wasn't anything there to record that with, and so, yeah, those types of conversations I've had with my family are pretty much lost, over the internet.
I'm going to give the phone number here again so we can hear from veterans who might want to call in and ask some questions about how to access this service. I'll be asking that in just a moment of Tim Walsh for those of you who are listening and would like to record your stories. The number is 866-780-9100. If you'd like to join us here on The Exchange today, where we're talking about the Veterans Oral History Project. About a year and a half ago, I heard many veterans' stories. As I said earlier, I accompanied an honor flight from North Iowa's Winnebago County to Washington, D.C. And just after the World War II veterans had watched the ceremony changing the guard at Arlington Cemetery's Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers, I asked 92-year-old Harvey Barkema of Forest City if his military service guard duty was anything like the ceremonial scene he had just seen. He chuckled and contrasted the spit and polish of the Arlington ceremony to his experience.
See, we were on the guns 24 hours a day. I was on Saipan and went in the invasion force for the 2nd and 4th Marines, first day in, and it was rough.
You didn't care if your shoes were shined?
Huh?
You didn't care if your shoes were shined that day?
No, you didn't care. You went through water and you got there and you didn't know when you were going to dry it out.
Bill Potterelli, you were chuckling there along with me as I listened to Harvey Barkema and his guard duty experience. And not all oral histories are that dramatic, though. But should that deter a veteran from recording his or her experiences, even if they seem mundane?
No, not at all. The purpose of the project is to reach out to everyone. And I view it as a jigsaw puzzle. We didn't win the war without puzzles missing, pieces of the puzzle missing. And for me, maybe there was over a million in uniform, but that was 300 million people ago. And they are very special people. And everyone was needed.
Tim Walsh, how do people get involved? We need to
get that on here.
And then,
sure.
Bill Potterelli, remind me, we're going to give that website where people can access those histories, and you've got that noted. I'll ask you to give that again. But how do veterans who are hearing us today get involved?
Well, first of all, I want to say any veteran of any war, any service, and frankly, not just war veterans, any military service, we would be pleased to document their service. Call the library, 319-643-5301. Just explain you want to interview a veteran, or you've got a father or an uncle or someone you want to have interviewed, and ask for Mary Evans, E-V-A-N-S, and that's 319-643-5301 at the Hoover Library, and that's 9 to 5. In fact, if you call on the weekends, we can take the information down and they'll pass it on to Mary.
And how long does it take to get scheduled and to get in?
You know, I know they work just as hard as we possibly can. It kind of depends on the availability of time that Bill or others have to be able to do that. But clearly we're concerned about those few World War II veterans who are left. They're dying so quickly, and we want to make sure we can document that. But we do our level best to find a time that's convenient for them as well as for our staff. And as I say, you don't have to come to the library. We try to come to a location that is convenient, and particularly, as I say, care centers where we've now found groups of people who want to participate who just can't drive any longer.
And that website, and now this, let me say before you start there, Bill, Tim, are these recordings, do they go right off to the Library of Congress and the family never sees them?
No. In fact, Dean, one of the wonderful things about this, the family history side of it is, for many members of the family, this is the first time they've heard their loved one talk about military service. And so we provide them with a DVD copy of the interview, so you have a record that the grandchildren and great-grandchildren and future generations, as long as we have the technology to show those things, will be available.
So at no cost?
At no cost. That's right. A DVD goes to the Library of Congress, and a DVD goes to the family.
Hmm, good. So, Bill Pottarelli, then how do people, they got the DVD, the family, but how would you or I, how would we access the stories that have been told?
On the website includes a link to the database, okay? And there's, like I said before, only 5% are actually on the website. So if you were one of the 95% that the story wasn't included, you'd have to go to Washington, yeah, actually, yeah, and search there for it. But the people there are very accommodating.
Yeah. Brian is calling from along Highway 18. I know he just has a question on information we just covered, but it may be specific, Tim. Go ahead, Brian, ask that question. Brian, are you with us? There. Brian, go ahead.
Oh, there I am. Thought I lost you for a minute there. My stepfather was in the Iwo Jima. It's a long story. He never talked too much about it. I'm just wondering, how do I get a hold of somebody? He lives in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. I was wondering how I can get a hold of, who I can get a hold of to have him tell his story. When he was there.
All right. I'm going to take you off the air, Brian, because your signal is very weak, but you can get that information from Bill Pottarelli here. Go ahead, right, Bill.
Many of these histories are actually taken without a partner. It's set up where it's pretty straightforward. The information can be gathered by the veteran and a family member, and the interview can then be done using simply an audio cassette or a home DVD camera.
They can do it themselves then.
That's right.
That's right.
And then send it in, you mean?
Right. Exactly.
Well, Brian, is that an option for you? I think he's gone now.
Okay.
But, go ahead.
There is a list of partners on the Veterans History Project website, and it's listed by state. So I would imagine Madison has a few partners that could help out.
So a way to do it is to access a website, the Library of Congress. Is that what you're saying?
The Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress, and look for partners, affiliated organizations.
And they will then be able to tell Brian's family how to get the stepfather of Brian's to a place that will record his story.
Exactly.
Okay. Lieutenant Colonel Cruz, you command the 109th Medical Battalion here in Iowa City. Do you think there will be a push 40 or 50 years from now to gather stories of vets from the wars of Iraq and Afghanistan? I mean, those are places, Afghanistan at least, is where you have served. What do you think about the future?
Well, I think, you know, as time goes on and as we end the wars and start moving forward, I think there will be a push to kind of go back and try to get, you know, the history of what happened, and not just through the, as you mentioned earlier, through the unit history. They want to see really from the soldiers on the ground. And so I think there will be a push, and I don't know if it'll be 40, 50 years or if it'll be, you know, in the next 5, 10. You know, as projects like this go on with World War II and or, you know, with the focus starting on World War II and moving forward, you know, I think more and more people will probably want to get more of a historical perspective from the individual soldier perspective.
Bill Crow, having served in Vietnam and as a Marine and having given your story now, you feel any compelling urge to access that website that Bill Pottarelli just told us about here and to listen to other Vietnam stories, you know, as a person who experienced some of it, but you didn't experience even 1% of it as what was going on in a place other than where you were. Is this something that you feel compelled you want to listen to, or you've lived it once and you don't ever want to hear about it again?
I have listened to some others, but most of them have been individuals I knew who have done this same project, mm-hmm. Some from Colorado, and I have listened to theirs. Yes, I do find it interesting to listen to the other experiences, mm-hmm. very much so.
Tim, I'm wondering, do you have any idea how many you've done over there at the library so far?
I believe at last it's over, well over 200. I think close to 250, I believe.
And how long is this going to last? I mean, you said the funding is from the federal government.
Sure.
But how long does that go on? Does it go on so that Colonel Cruz can tell his story?
Dean, how long does funding go on from the federal government? We want to do this as long as we can provide a service to veterans and to history, because mm-hmm. those are two visions and mandates that we have as an historical institution. And as I mentioned, because we have this direct tie to the Veterans Administration and the establishment of the Veterans Administration, it will go on as long as we have interested people like Bill Ponderelli and staff people like Mary Evans to be able to pull this off.
Bill Ponderelli?
I started this project just viewing and indexing the previously recorded interviews. And then when I started doing the interviews, I realized it was a way for me to connect with my father's generation. He's been dead for about 20 years, and I'd lost all touch. And this is wonderful personal experience for me, and I think many people feel that way.
Would you take Tim or Bill Ponderelli, ask the question of either one of you want to answer, would you take Colonel Cruz, who we've got on the telephone here right now, could he come in as an active duty person and give his story about Afghanistan or any of his service?
Technically, it's for veterans, and since he's on active duty.
So a veteran means separated from the military.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been discharged, et cetera.
Colonel Cruz, that cuts you out right now, but once you do get your retirement, if that's what you're working toward, you going to head toward the West Branch?
I'll definitely keep that in mind.
That's good. Well, and of course, we want the memory when it is freshest. So ultimately, it is right after the service has been completed, because, of course, with a lot of the World War II veterans, memories have begun to fade and so forth. And as Bill Crow mentioned, trying to keep things in order can be very difficult without the benefit of letters or other contemporary documents.
But isn't it important right now for people like Colonel Cruz, who commands a unit and has been in Afghanistan, maybe to talk it up among his people?
Yes. There's no question that first of all, their service is important and should be documented. Secondly, in many cases, the military does do its own oral histories as well. What's valuable here is to get that diversity of experiences that you get from so many different veterans serving so many different roles, some of them in the forward in the battle and some of them mm-hmm. behind the lines. Yeah. We need to hear all the stories, or as many as we can record.
Bill Ponderelli, you are going out, as I understand it now, to retirement homes.
That's correct.
You have equipment that you take out and set up in a place like that. And
all we need is a video camera.
Mm-hmm. Which we do provide, yeah.
Yeah, that's all. And a little preparation ahead of time, filling out paperwork, demographic information mostly. The database to be able to search meaningfully requires the name, date, et cetera, periods of service. But the keystone is still the veterans speaking about their experience.
We have a caller coming from Iowa City who is asking a question that I can't take on the air because we're getting just too close to the end of our program here. But he does raise a good point. He's asking about censorship. Are there things that can't be said?
Let me just put it this way: from what I understand, from what there are certain guidelines. We work with NARA, which is in the structure of the White House, and this is a Library of Congress congressional structure. there are certain things that do concern our government that we should not be delving into. One veteran I interviewed, I didn't realize he was part of a covert operation in Germany during the Korean War. And I think I probably should have stopped sooner than in an instant he was of action that he was relating to me. So it's covert activity, any atomic secrets. But other than that, there's anything that would really damage our military effort and hurt the soldiers that are in the field. But other than that, like the fellow that called from Central Iowa, he had a horrible experience.
We're coming to the end of the program, Tim Walsh. Tell us again how to get in touch with the
Veterans. It's Veterans History Project at the Hoover Library, and the general telephone number for the Hoover Library is 319-643-5301, 9 to 5. Ask for Mary Evans, and we'll hope to set it up.
Been talking with Tim Walsh, who directs the Hoover Library in West Branch, Bill Pottarelli, who volunteers at the library recording these interviews, Bill Crow, a Marine veteran who's given his oral history, and Lieutenant Colonel Kevin Cruz, who has served in Afghanistan and has talked about contemporary military service. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. We had assistance today from Mitchell Schmidt, technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk programs is Jeff Schmidt. Our theme music, composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dean Borg, and thanks for joining us.